Bangly Bang. Hello, Pod. I'm Chris Hewitt, and welcome to a very special edition of the Empire Podcast. This may be the first in a regular series of shameless plugs in this month's issue, which has Jeff Goldblum looking resplendent on the cover for Independence Day Resurgence. You will find a lovingly compiled list, compiled by us, the staff of Empire Magazine, of the 50 greatest sci-fi moments of all time. And not just movie moments, TV as well. So we thought it would be a simply capital idea to get together and discuss the whys and wherefores of that list, the things we got right, the things we maybe got wrong, the glaring omissions, the glaring emissions. Is that right? Is that a word?
I don't think it's a word. No.
Anyway, doesn't matter. It's sci-fi. We can make up words. Glorious. Glorious sci-fi. Joining me to discuss the list in great detail, you've already heard it whispering, it's Helen O'Hara.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. All the better for talking about sci-fi.
You like sci-fi, don't you?
I do, yes.
Dan Jolin's here.
Nanu nanu.
Dan's a big sci-fi guy.
I am. I think of all the speculative fiction genres, I think it's the most effective in cinema.
What is your favourite? Sci or fi?
Well, fi. No, sorry. No, wait.
Oh my goodness, Dan's head just exploded. That was unexpected.
How can I pick between the two? Because you know, science is endlessly fascinating. You know, every
okay,
aspect of...
and Johnny Pyle, our deputy editor, will also be here at some point. We're hoping.
Hooray!
What we're going to do, because we don't have a lot of time, sadly, is we're going to go down the list, 50 to number one, discuss some of the more standout moments.
Great.
And then at the end, I want each of you to lobby for a film that should have been on there. Or
okay.
A moment that should have been on there.
Yeah. All right.
Or a TV show that should have been on there.
Yeah.
Something, okay?
Yeah.
Right, okay. Starting off, number 50, Flight of the Navigator. The moment where David, played by Joey Kramer, arrives home after his flight.
Mm.
He's a navigator. Mm. And he flies.
Yeah. I wrote this entry, actually.
Yeah.
This was mine. It's kind of one of those sort of forgotten movies from the 80s era where it all got very, you know, all that kind of like that Amblin vibe. This is actually a Disney movie, but it's got a really, really strong sci-fi concept in it because it uses the idea of relativity or time lag or however you want to describe it. So, yeah, this kid basically vanishes for all these years, but to him, he just fell asleep in the forest. Mm-hmm. And the reason he's vanished is because he's gone off on this, you know, this flight on this spaceship. And the reason I wanted it on the list was because it's like a childhood nightmare. I used to have this weird nightmare, like I'd come home from school and try and get into my own home and I wouldn't be able to open the door, and then the door would open and a stranger would be standing there, and inside everything would be decorated differently or something, like somehow the place that was my home would no longer be my home. And this is exactly what this moment keys into. So it's a great emotional moment that really resonates, but at the same time it comes from a science fiction origin. It could only have happened with a science fiction device.
I would slightly argue with that conclusion just because there's a very good fantasy novel called Homeward Bounders, which also plays with the same notion. Mm. But it actually has some sci-fi ideas in there as well, so I'm going to let it go. I remember being quite horrified by it when I watched it as a kid as well. It's much tougher stuff than you expect in one of these films, I think. So hooray for that.
Yeah.
Well, we spent a lot of time discussing number 50.
Well, we don't have to go through
every single entry
on the list. I think we should, you know, there should be some salient entries.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I will go through every entry in the list, but to read the full thing, to read Dan's wonderful words, to pick up the new issues on sale now, All Good and Evil Newsagents, priced just £4.50, which is very, very good. All right, number 40, 49, 49. It's a moment from Star Trek The Motion Picture.
I can't believe we have any moment from Star Trek The Motion Picture. I'm appalled by this. However, admittedly, if you're going to choose one, this is the one to choose. It's beautiful.
This is the kiss, isn't it? No, wait.
Chris,
stop
reading your fan fiction.
Hang on. Actually, the light is shining on the magazine. I can't read it. Oh, this is the introduction of the Enterprise. When Kirk is reunited with the Enterprise. And like everything else in Star Trek The Motion Picture, it is hugely long and self-important. However, it is a good section.
It's a beautiful, beautiful shot, and the music is fantastic. It's just the whole story around it that's terrible.
49th greatest.
And we did say
moments,
not films.
This is true.
So, 48 is a personal favourite of mine. We've got AI, artificial intelligence. The dinner table malfunction is actually not the moment I would have chosen from that film. I would have chosen probably the bit at the end, which just kills me every time, where he's just talking to the blue fairy in the submarine.
Yeah.
Ah, just destroys me. And then the super the super evolved robots turn up at the end and give him a little bit of a dream come true.
So if you haven't seen AI, artificial intelligence,
yeah, I just spoiled it.
But it's one of the most misunderstood endings I think I've to this day I still see people saying it's a happy ending, and it's Spielberg tacked on a happy ending to Kubrick's
exactly. And first vision. Of all, it's Kubrick's ending.
It's Kubrick's ending.
And if you go to the Kubrick exhibition that certainly was at I think it was LACMA a couple mm-hmm. of years ago, it actually has his storyboards for it there. It is definitely Kubrick's ending, but also it's a great film that gets eternally overlooked.
Absolutely. Anyway. Apologies, listeners, but we do have, sadly, we only have, 45 minutes today scheduled in the booth? We do have day jobs. It's the thing about this podcast. You know, we could sit in this booth and talk about sci-fi moments in men's fashion all day, but we got things to do. And it's also press day, which doesn't help either. Anyway, Fantastic Planet. Fantastic Planet. This is number 47. René Laloux's cut an animation.
So this is one of those kind of gorgeous sort of curios from the 70s in a way. I mean, it's just an amazing image, really. This is what we focused on here. So you've got these aliens called the Drags, and they keep humans as pets.
Johnny Pyle is here.
Hello, everyone.
Come join us. So yeah, it's just a really arresting image of this huge blue alien holding a human in its hand. A fine example of interspecies appreciation.
Oh, that's lovely. Hello, Johnny.
Hello, mate. How are you?
I'm good. You all right?
Yeah, touch out of breath. I'm all right,
though. It's going to be fun. Hear you heavily breathing for the next...
Let's just do two or three entries and I'll stop hyperventilating and then we'll be fine.
All right, we'll talk around you. So next up is a moment from Avatar, the most successful movie of all time. Very low down on the list.
I think Avatar is underrated as a sci-fi movie, actually. I think it's proper sci-fi. You know, it looks like the cover of all those books I read growing up that were on my dad's shelf, and it is it's a proper series of sci-fi concepts, mining an alien world, dealing with indigenous species, and, you know, putting your mind in another body. That's proper sci-fi. So this moment that we've chosen, which is Jake waking up in his new avatar body, is kind of key to selling the whole film. You've got to believe that to believe anything about the story that follows. So I think it works as well as it does is a testament to James Cameron.
Absolutely. I like this moment. I do like Avatar. It has somewhat been sullied over the years. Just as it has diminished a little bit for me, but I do remember watching that moment for the first time. It is a cracker. But would you have had any other moments from Avatar?
Yeah, I would have actually had the Banshee flying moment. Yeah,
good flying
pretty
moment.
Amazing.
The bit where he gets in the power loader and fights the alien, and oh, wait a minute, no, that's another film.
Yeah, we'll get to that.
I think the moment where Parker Selfridge, played by, what's his name? Giovanni Ribisi, mm-hmm. plays golf in his office, which shows that golf will never die.
No, it shows that all people who play golf are evil.
See, that's true. That's your reading of it?
Yeah.
It's my reading of it.
Yeah. The sport of evil.
Yeah. Sorry, he's got like a golf club and it's on Pandora, but the Navi are not allowed. Navi in a golf club? That's outrageous. For a start to 9 feet tall, it get way more distance off the tee. Right, 45 is the first TV moment. Now, this is the first Empire Pole to ever blend film and television. Johnny?
Hi, mate.
Can you talk about that? Why we've decided to blend these two mediums?
Well, I think it's because actors almost don't see any difference between moving between the two mediums. I mean, when we're talking about TV, we're not talking, sadly, about Pointless or anything like that. I mean, they are...
What a great idea for a feature.
I know, right?
The 50 greatest pointless moments of all time.
I know, but next issue. But, you know, we're talking about, you know, cinematic moments with people of great talent crafting things that could, you know, move between the two, film or TV. Yeah. So, because, you know, when you're growing up, like, it'll come later, but, you know, X-Files was on TV all the time, and that informed a lot about what we think about science fiction, certainly, people of our age. We decided that the time was right. The time's now.
The time is now.
And, you know, I think, you know, some of the best cinema at the moment is on telly.
It's true. And certainly, you know, this particular episode of Black Mirror is a good example of that. I mean, also, Donald Gleeson and Hayley Atwell, that's a cinematic cast right there, isn't it?
Yeah, so this is from the episode Be Right Back from Black Mirror, where Donald Gleeson dies in a car accident and comes back as a robot. Charlie Brooker's show, all the episodes explore certain facets of futuristic technology, and this is the moment we have chosen, and not Rory Kinnear shagging a pig. Which is interesting. Which is good. Believe me, I do not want that image in my head ever again. Right, 44. The alien sex scene from Monsters. I think that's enough said
Perverts.
About that.
No, it's beautiful, though. It's a beautiful sex scene.
All right.
Yeah.
pervert.
Yeah. No, it's because, the great thing about that moment is you've got these giant aliens walking around and you expect it to be a moment of devastation and destruction, and it's not. It's a moment of creation.
I didn't know where to look, I'll be honest with you.
Are they definitely copulating for reproduction?
Well,
this isn't like a one-night stand.
I thought you were going to just ask, are they definitely copulating? And the answer would be yes. However, you've just taken it to the next level. And I honestly don't know if it's fun sex or just 100% we're trying for a baby sex.
Horribly mechanical.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe they hooked up a monster Tinder. Monster with no E. Maybe that was it. Swipe right with your 14 tentacles.
Horrifying. What, Minder. Horrifying.
I want to see a film about these guys. I want to see a film about... He gets worried. It's like a glorious monster meet cute rom-com where he's...
So sort of a Bite Last Night, but with monsters.
Oh, she hasn't called me back. Whoa, what happened? Was I not good enough? Oh, no. And his monster best friend, played by Rob Reiner, is like consoling him. Uh-huh. All right.
I can't believe they did Monsters Dark Continent instead of that.
Instead of that? Personally, when Harry ate Sally. Right, the space dance.
This was
from
mine
Wall-E.
As well. I mean, it's magic, isn't it? It's beautiful.
It's good. It's
who doesn't
good.
Love, who doesn't love that?
You criticise the physics of the moment, though, I believe, Helen.
Yes.
And slightly upsets me.
I'm sorry. I have heard it criticised by physicists, and therefore I felt like I should include their worries. Apparently you can't use a fire extinguisher to propel yourself in a vacuum like that. It is also a problem, of course, with gravity. By that, I mean the film, not the theory.
But every action has an equal and opposite reaction, right? And if there's no
But there's nothing for
forces,
it to react to. There's not, like, it's not... It's not pushing against anything to push you anywhere, I think is the problem.
So how do jetpacks work in general in space?
I don't know. I'm not a physicist.
But they do, don't they?
I've seen it
yes,
in loads of films.
Do.
Yeah.
I don't know. Look, I'm just telling you what I was told, which is that apparently it doesn't work.
We should have checked this. We should have phoned up some physicists.
You're Neil deGrasse Tyson, aren't you? That's basically what you are. You're poo-pooing everything.
I am.
Pixar should have checked it.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. That's
no,
true.
It's not our job.
Shame on you, Pixar. Shame on you.
But George Clooney uses him in Gravity. He goes, pfft, and he...
Well, only because he's trying to get away from a woman his own age.
Oh!
Whoa.
Burn!
Thank you, Tina Fey and Amy Poehler.
By the way...
Oh, my God, that's right.
Mentioning Gravity, it's not on this list, but there's a good reason for it.
Why?
It's not science fiction.
I mean, I think it is science fiction.
It isn't.
It is, mate.
It's a disaster movie.
No.
Yeah, it's not science fiction. You're right. Yeah, science fiction presupposes the existence of a technology that does not, in fact, exist, and everything in Gravity pretty much exists.
I don't think that's true, because she doesn't wear a space nappy. She just has, like, she would be wearing a space nappy, but she doesn't. She just wears normal pants.
I think that's just an inaccuracy, not a new technology.
No, it's a special space nappy that is small and looks like normal pants.
Uh-huh. I'm going to go with it. It is science fiction because it involves science and it's fiction.
That's not the definition.
Ergo, it's science fiction. Just because you forgot to put one of the greatest movies of the last 10 years on the list, Dan.
What?
And you're trying desperately to cover your tracks at the last minute.
What?
Are we sure all that technology exists?
I'm not sure it does. Pretty much.
Well, pretty much. So no.
I think it's a near future movie rather than a right now movie.
Fine,
but there's some things in this list that are they sci-fi? Are they not? There are films in this list that technically are sci-fi, but I don't think of them as sci-fi. So that's an interesting discussion for later on.
Great.
Anyway, number 42 is a film I love. I'm not sure how many people know it in this room. The Day the Earth Caught Fire.
I don't know it, actually.
You
I have to
it.
Confess, I don't know it.
It is fantastic.
But when you pitched for this moment to be on the list, Chris, I looked at it and I thought, I must see that film sometime.
It's great. I've got the Blu-ray. I will bring it in for you.
Thank you.
It is awesome. It is a Fal Guest movie from 1961. Very, very high concept movie, low budget. Earth has essentially been knocked out of its orbit and is heading towards the sun and is being slowly baked. And mankind launches a mission which mostly takes place off screen to try and knock it back into its orbit. So it predates Sunshine. It predates all those disaster movies of the most recent years. It predates, and this moment predates 28 Days Later. Basically, everything Cillian Murphy's been in.
Yeah.
Comes from this movie.
Oh, Peaky Blinders.
Even Peaky Blinders.
Wow.
The fashion in this movie is extraordinary.
Inception.
Even Inception. Everything he's been in. So the beginning of this movie has the lead character, played by Edward Judd, walk around a deserted London. And it's really eerie, and there's some wonderful matte paintings involved. It's a great, great film, so check it out. Is When Worlds Collide on this list? It's not, is it?
No.
Another great sci-fi movie from the 50s I would recommend. A great, predates all those planets smashing into each other movies that happened recently. Number 41, Rise of the Planet of the Apes. Caesar says no.
Yes. I mean, no. Yes.
Good.
I was actually in the room when Andy Serkis delivered that line.
Did he know you were
where it happened?
During the ADR session in Wellington, New Zealand.
That is not an interesting story.
It is. Because it was a spoiler moment, and obviously they don't like journalists witnessing spoiler moments. I had to keep quiet. I had to pretend I wasn't there. I was hiding in the corner.
Is it a spoiler moment in a prequel?
Well, the funny thing about this film was, it was one of those kind of spoiler non-spoilers, because they were very much insisting the apes in this movie do not talk at the time. It was all supposed to be setting it up. But of course, they did. This is a really powerful moment. And actually, it's even more powerful for coming right after one of the clumsiest moments in the film, where, what's his name?
Tom
Draco Malfoy says, "Get your hands off me, you damn dirty ape," or whatever, which doesn't land well at all. But then, and then this moment comes straight after and just rescues the whole scene.
All right, I'm going to make an executive decision here. I'm going to not go through everything on the list, because I've just realized we've got 25 minutes left and we're on number 40.
41.
So I'm going to go through the top 10.
Pick out some interesting moments.
We'll go through the top 10 and then we can pick out interesting ones, I think, after that. Actually, you know what? I'm going to start from 11, because 11 is a moment.
As is traditional.
I personally feel should have been in the top 10. Not just because I wrote it, but I didn't write the moment. Bill Lancaster wrote the moment. But I wrote the bit about the moment, which is the blood test sequence from John Carpenter's The Thing. It's at number 11. This is an amazing moment. And again, this is one of those films that people might not necessarily think of as sci-fi, although it involves an alien and flying saucers. They might think of it as horror first and foremost, but it is very much
sci-fi. It is a sci-fi movie, yeah. Sci-fi horror.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Like all the best ones.
Absolutely.
It's a terrific, terrific moment, terrific film. Love it.
And such an influential moment as well. And so good. But once you know that the hand... So if you look very closely, Kurt Russell's hand is fake. There's a close-up of him, and he's got his hand in close-up, and it's actually a fake hand, so that the blood can squirt out of the Petri dish when the thing's infected blood is touched with the flame. And once you know that, it's very, very hard to get around. But I will say... For a movie that has tons of prosthetics, courtesy of the great Rob Bottin, this has the moment that genuinely makes me squirm every single time, and it is such a small moment. It is, never mind when dogs split apart or when people's heads erupt with spider legs or a chest gives way and has fangs and bites off someone's arms. Never mind all that. Simple blood test: scalpel goes along a thumb and produces a drop of blood. That's the moment that gets me every single time.
It feels real.
It feels real.
Like it could happen to you. You know your head probably isn't going to sprout legs.
We really hope.
Again.
It was that one time. But everyone experiments in college. But otherwise, Thing at number 11. But knocking it out at the top 10.
But I wonder if we should have started at 12, since Independence Day was the reason, the inspiration for this list.
The reason for the season, if you will.
We were so excited about Independence Day Resurgence, and we were talking about... Hey, wasn't it great when the White House explodes?
Yeah.
And we're like, hey, that was a great sci-fi moment. Hey, we should do the 50 greatest sci-fi moments.
This is how the magic happens.
I know. It's a peek behind the curtain.
Mm. Indeed. That is one of the great moments. I was thinking about this yesterday for exactly the same reason, Independence Day Resurgence. And it actually did change cinema a little bit, what he did in that film, the scale of the disaster in that film and the scale of the disaster that he showed on screen in that film, I think, was the first of the real kind of modern let's just destroy everything movies. I know, you've just been talking about films in the 50s where the world was threatened, the world was under siege and whatever else. Of course, Planet of the Apes, the entire human race has been supplanted. But you didn't see everything blow up, which is what you did see. Or you felt like you saw an Independence Day.
Except you didn't. That's a funny thing.
I know, but you think
it's,
you did.
It's like three buildings. Not three buildings, but it's three landmarks, three areas that spark it off. It's LA and it's DC and it's New York. And they don't actually show anything else.
As we learned, of course, from Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs, disasters do tend to strike the landmarks first and then spread out worldwide.
And as Jeff Goldblum says in the new film as well.
Spoiler.
It's in the trailer.
Spoiler for the trailer.
And this was in the trailer as well, which is the destruction of the White House. They do show more than that. They show LA getting trounced. You see the fire.
LA, New York, Washington.
Okay. Tell you what, don't look at the copy because I wrote this. What are the three buildings that get destroyed? The White House.
The White House. Yeah. Oh, yeah, I don't know the one in LA.
The White House. Hang on. So wait, well, it's Washington, New York. Is the
Empire State.
Is the Empire State or is it Chrysler Building?
No, Empire State.
Top of my head, LA. I'm guessing it's the US Bank Tower.
You have looked.
Have I? Oh, yeah. So it is. There it is. The US Bank Tower. I love this sequence. I think this is one of the pinnacles of modern disaster movie making. It's absolutely fantastic. And the build up to it and the destruction. Yeah. Most of it, I mean, the models are practical.
Yeah.
And that's one of the great things about it.
It's a model.
Yeah. There's CG, there's models, there's all sorts of stuff. The real White House was blown up for this. It was extraordinary.
It was on the news and everything, didn't it?
Yeah,
didn't you see that?
I was very young in 96.
Yeah. But, as you say here in your piece, the aliens positioned 108 city destroyers over the Earth, and presumably they all fire off at the same time. I'm guessing London was one of the cities positioned. I mean,
it is.
Put
it
out
is. Yeah. It's mentioned in the dialogue of the film. They say London is one of the places.
Yeah. But London in Independence Day Research seems to have been rebuilt exactly
as does the Eiffel Tower. So I think they just rebuilt there's obviously a psychological reason for it, because if we're getting into Independence Day Resurgence talk, which we'll talk about
on a spoiler special.
But I think there's obviously people have rebuilt those landmarks specifically, or certainly some of those landmarks that we see.
Landmarks I can understand, but rebuilding like the walkie-talkie building, I mean, no one wants that.
That wouldn't have been one of
them. That's a very good point.
That's new now.
You see those adverts for Euro 96?
I hadn't seen them.
I
probably saw them at the time.
Terry Venables and Ian Wright, advert for Independence Day Resurgence, but with Terry Venables and Ian Wright talking about, oh yeah, Euro 96 was a great, great time, then the aliens arrived. And you're kind of going, what?
Oh, right, I see.
You're blaming Gareth Southgate's penalty miss on aliens? I mean, I'm not sure that's canon.
I'm really confused.
I don't know, it's a really weird blending of sci-fact and sci-fiction. Right, in the top 10. Holy shit, Darth Vader is Luke Skywalker's father? When did this happen?
Is this really a sci-fi moment? I guess, but...
So this was the question. One of the debates was, is that a sci-fi film for Gravity and such like?
Sure,
and the other thing is this a sci-fi moment?
Yeah.
Or is it a moment in a sci-fi film, and therefore we accept it, and we decide if it was a sci-fi film and there was a moment within it, then
all right,
that was
fair,
fair game.
All right. Okay.
I mean, my feeling was that it's such a flexible genre. There's so much variety within it that you can actually have so many different kinds of fantastic moments, but they all count as science fiction moments. So that's why there's moments here that are about spectacle and vision and ideas, but there's also moments here that are about emotion and truly, you know, universal things. Like, for example, discovering that your dad is actually an evil force-wielding cyborg.
Oh, we've all been there.
Yeah. Okay, again, without looking at the papers, what is the line? The
line.
Darth Vader line.
It's, Obi-Wan never told you what happened to your father. He told me enough. He told me you killed him. No, I am your father.
Very good.
Yeah.
Yeah, which I wrote correctly, then you changed back to the wrong one and I had to change back again.
Yeah, this is too much behind the curtain.
So thanks for that, Dan.
And to be fair, I spotted my own mistake and told you about it. And I said, oh, look, I've done this silly thing. I'm changing it back.
You silly.
But yeah, everyone, I don't know. Maybe it's just me that remembers it's Luke, I am your father.
Yeah, no, you're, yeah, it is literally just me. You. Yeah.
Oh, dear.
No, it's father, I am your Luke.
This is really embarrassing.
It's a great moment. This is sci-fi. It's a man wearing a helmet with a big laser sword in space.
All right, fine.
Well, actually, he's not in space. He's in the upper atmosphere of a gas cloud.
Gas giant. I mean, come on.
You put the Dan in pedant. Yeah, number 10. Should it have been higher?
Well, let's see what else is in the top 10.
Should it be that moment from that film?
It's the Star Wars moment, isn't it? I mean, it's just...
I love you, I know.
There's so many... Oh, that's not a sci-fi moment. The man is being put into the thing that doesn't exist.
I would
exist.
Have had the Rancor Keeper.
The Rancor Keeper?
The Rancor Keeper.
It's a different film.
That's morning. Just
I know,
weird.
Well, yeah, from a different Star Wars film.
Well, yeah, but Return of the Jedi could be in here and actually isn't in here.
There's
no Rancor, there's no...
It's a trap!
That's a great moment.
Yeah.
I love the moment when they come out of hyperspace. It's just the moment where they go into the hyperspace where the rebel fleet just goes and disappears. And then, of course, the moment when they realise it is a trap. That's so good. And everything with Luke Vader and the Emperor. Anyway.
Yeah.
Number 9. Hanky said at the ready, not because it's an alien sex scene, because Spock's dead.
Oh.
It's the death of Spock from Star Trek The Wrath of Khan, Star Trek II The Wrath of Khan. Helen, you wrote this.
I did.
For which I eternally hate you because I wanted to write it.
And Dan knew that.
Dan knew that. But
it was deliberate.
Yeah, you absolute prick. Love you.
It was good because I got to watch it again to write it and cried all over again. There has never, ever, ever been a time when I've watched the scene and not cried. And I've seen it a lot of times. It gets me every single time.
Even though you know he's coming back?
Yes. Spoiler.
Like, he outlives everybody.
He does. But yeah. It's an amazing scene. Spock sacrifices himself to save the Enterprise. You know, the question that runs through those films, the needs of the one, the needs of the many. In this case, the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the one. And it's just so moving because it has the weight of 3 decades of friendship behind it. And you feel that. And I think that's why Star Trek Into Darkness doesn't work. It doesn't have that earned emotion that you get from this. Because even if you never watched the series, at the time I saw this, I had not watched a lot of the original series. I'd watched a few episodes here or there. But you still just got it from this screenplay. You still got it from this film. Mm. That weight of the friendship behind them. And I think it's...
I think it's also culturally, you know, I first saw this, you know, what age was I? I'm not prepared to say. But anyway, I was young enough to not really know Star Trek that much, but I knew Spock. I knew culturally what that meant, you know, even though I didn't know what culturally meant. and I knew that his death was a big deal. But also, I think one of the things that's overlooked about the sequence is how fucking good Shatner and Nimoy are.
Yes.
Sorry for the language, people, but...
No, they are.
They're amazing. And, you know, Shatner gets a lot of shit over the years for... being, you know, this... over actor, but here he's absolutely amazing. And also I loved a bit later on at Spock's funeral where he goes, you know, and his
of all the souls I've encountered
on my travels,
his was most
human.
Yes, one wonders if Spock would have considered that a compliment, having kept his human half somewhat tamped down over the years, but there's clearly a wealth of emotion behind it. And yeah, the funeral scene, despite the bagpipery, is also wonderful.
What a moment. Number 8 is a moment from The Matrix. This is a very interesting choice of moment.
Mm. I think it's... Well, interesting is an interesting choice of word.
Okay. It's the moment when Neo wakes up in the gunk tank, so to speak, and realises that everything he knows was wrong. Mm. Why this moment?
Well, it's not the iconic moment, is it?
No.
Or one of the many iconic moments, which is why it gave me pause for thought when it was first suggested and then... pushed through in the meeting. but it was indeed.
Let's get it all out now.
Maybe, you know, Dan can tell you better why it's here.
Because it's the most important moment in the film. I think it's the moment that actually sums the film up best and what it did so well, which is, firstly, we were talking earlier about, you know, different types of sci-fi moment. This is about vision. This is about an image of the world as seen through the eyes of someone who thought he was already living in the real world. It's an amazing moment. It's like the rug pull, but it's in the first third of the film. And you've got to remember, a lot of people went to see this film and didn't know what The Matrix was. I mean, it was that you start watching it and you think you're just kind of, you're watching people with superpowers doing cool stuff. You don't know why. And it's a really interesting philosophical idea about, you know, how do you define reality? What is reality? And the whole idea that in the end, reality is this, you know, fire blasted robot dominated world where humanity's not even slaves. We're not even slaves. We are batteries. We're a power source. It's absolutely devastating. And it comes so early on as well. And it just works brilliantly, I think, you know. And also it looks a bit Geiger-ish, so it kind of recalls things, you know, like Alien and Aliens. It's a little bit Alice in Wonderland in the stuff that's built around it. You know, I think, yeah, fine, I know Kung Fu is cool and the lobby scene is great, but again, they feel more like action scenes because this is a sci-fi action movie. So those are the scenes which are about the action. I think this is the scene that's about the science fiction.
He's convinced me.
Okay.
Genuinely, or are you...
Well, semi.
I'll take that.
The bullet time was so important in this film, though.
But that's a visual effects moment.
Yeah, but it was so revolutionary, it seemed, at the time. It beat Phantom Menace to the Oscar for special effects, I think. And that feels to me like the moment that was really picked up by popular culture, and then lots of people did it.
AKA the obvious moment.
Well, okay, but yeah, maybe it is obvious, but maybe it's obvious for a reason.
Once you get down to the nitty-gritty, once you get down to the top 10, I expect obvious moments. because those are the moments that defined those films. I think it's interesting. I'm not knocking your choice here, Dan.
But this is the thing.
I'm not physically knocking you.
This is the point of lists. You want people to read them and, you know, sometimes violently disagree and come online and tell you.
Not violently, ideally. No violence, please.
And politely disagree online.
Absolutely, but you know, in coming up with lists, if any list of any kind, for whether it's for the magazine or for a website, if you think that we do them in a sort of just tick a box, there are arguments, there are huge debates, there's sometimes blows. There's never been a blow, but yeah, this is interesting. Number 8, The Matrix. Number 7, I think everyone's going to agree with this one. It's Get Away From Her, You Bitch.
I get why you would choose this. I get that this is probably the moment everybody talks about. It's not my favourite moment in Aliens.
It's not my favourite moment in
Aliens. It's not mine either.
Well, so maybe not. We're not.
Well, it's my favourite moment in Aliens.
But this is the thing. This is interesting that you don't go for Matrix, but you do go for Aliens.
Yeah.
Which is, that's the key moment, the crowd-pleasing moment.
Aliens is great moment after great moment after great moment. But this one just feels like the pinnacle. The whole film's building up to this. Which
Dan
is
just basically
Ripley.
Couldn't be bothered to write anything underneath it, so he was happy just to put the quote and then move on to the next one.
So what's your favourite moment, Johnny and Chris?
Johnny first.
I like all the aliens, when they realise that there are tons and tons and tons of aliens and they're all coming.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great moment.
It's pretty cool. You,
yeah.
Chris?
Probably... Actually, no, I've never really, really stopped to think about this. That's up there. I like the little moments. I like the Bishop Hudson knife dance.
Knife dance, okay. My favourite is Hicks repeating Ripley's, I say we take off, nuke the site from orbit, it's the only way to be sure. It is, for me, the sexiest moment in film history, the greatest chat-up line ever.
Not the moment when he gives her the track interface and says, you know, it's not like we're engaged or anything. And there's a little frisson.
So many frissons, but I think this is the frisson for me because it shows that he just accepts her knowledge and doesn't argue with her and doesn't patronise her. And that's awesome.
Yeah. If we're talking about the entire franchise, I like the bit at the start of Alien 3 where they completely undermine the entire plot of Aliens and kill off two of the characters before the film starts.
That's a great
that's
moment.
And in brilliant. Alien Resurrection, I like it when she shoots that basketball over her head.
that was a real shot.
Amazing, yeah.
Yeah, she really did that.
She really did that.
Done it for real.
In fact, it's very interesting that Alien comes ahead of Aliens. Not to give too much away, but Alien is ahead of Aliens. Does that mean that we think that Alien is a better film than Aliens, which is something I don't agree with.
I love Aliens more and I watch Aliens more, but that's because I find Aliens scarier and I am a wuss. So I'm not sure that is necessarily a qualitative.
As a teenage boy, I much preferred Aliens, but I'm coming round to Alien now. I think it's a lot smarter.
Alien is probably...
Not sure about that.
Not saying Aliens isn't smart, I just think Alien is a lot smarter.
Alien, they're both great, great films, but it's Aliens for me all the way. Having said that, the Alien moment is pretty much unbeatable in cinema, which is why it comes in at number 4. So, number 6.
So we sell that one.
Number 6 is Maria's transformation from Metropolis, the second oldest entry in the list, Fritz Lang's 1927 black and white masterpiece, again, hugely influential.
Massively. I mean, maybe more so than anything else on the list just because it's been around longer. But in terms of the visuals, I mean, those have been stolen by everything. I mean, notably further down the list, we didn't talk about it, but The Fifth Element, for example, wouldn't exist without Metropolis.
C-3PO wouldn't exist.
C-3PO wouldn't exist without Metropolis. It's a hugely, hugely important film. And it's still pretty amazing, actually. It was one of these things where I was like, all right, I should probably go see this. Like, you know, I should probably know about this film. And was slightly went out of duty rather than love, and it is an incredible piece of cinema. Even now, if you get the chance to see it on the big screen, I highly recommend it. It's longer than you think it's going to be. You assume that all films are short. They are not short. But it is an amazing film and definitely worth the time.
So that's Metropolis at number 6. At number 5, Dan, it's the end of Planet of the Apes. Is this your favourite film?
One of my favourites. In the top 5.
Okay.
Both Dan and I petitioned for this to be one.
Really?
I did argue right at the outset. I think that's originally I said, let's do this, but only if the end of Planet of the Apes can be number one.
Interesting.
How did it
end up at number 5? That's a big drop.
I'm a reasonable guy. And also I'm not, you know...
You pick your battles.
The king of the world.
You get that Matrix moment in at 8.
Yeah, yeah.
And this goes number five.
But yeah, this I would actually say is, in my heart, the greatest film ending of all time, as well as being one of the greatest sci-fi
moments. Nothing has floored me like this, because I didn't know it was coming when I first watched it.
Yeah.
Nothing has floored me like this. Not Usual Suspects, not nothing.
Yeah. Mm. And despite the fact that there are horses on this planet and they all speak English. I mean, you know, if you really think about it, it's bloody obvious.
Well, what probably happened is that Charlton Heston grew up watching, like, Star Trek and believing that just one thing would be different on each planet.
Yeah, yeah.
And didn't realise that, hey, that seems unlikely, actually, if you think about the odds.
But it does. It plays with science fiction convention in that sense.
Yes.
In that the audience just accepts it. Oh, yeah, fine, because that's what they are used to from science fiction films. But this film actually has a reason for it. It's also the best single piece of acting from Charlton Heston as well, I think, where he falls to his knees and punches the sand. And it was quite controversial as well, because God Damn You All to Hell was considered swearing at the time, and they wanted the film to have a family rating.
I was once with a bunch of young Americans, so I was trying not to swear to, you know, provide a good example. And so instead of saying, you know, the F word, I said God Damn. And somebody went, oh, you said the GD word. And I was like, there's a GD word? Oh, no.
I've got a C-bomb in my locker. Don't make me use it. Five, Planet of the Apes. Four, chest burster scene from Alien. This is inarguable, isn't it? This is...
So not the chest burster scene from Spaceballs? Come on.
This is true. That's number three. We're
going to
get there in a
second. Thank goodness.
I mean, this is just...
Yeah, you can't argue
with that. This is a scene that you think everyone who... Even if you haven't seen Alien, you know about this scene.
Yes.
And that's, I think, testament to its impact. Extraordinary. It just imagine, put yourself in the shoes of an audience going into a cinema in 1979. You've no idea this is coming. And you've been conditioned to think that John Hurt is the lead of this movie. There he certainly, you know, becoming starter, main course, and dessert, and his own last dinner. It's really brilliant.
It is inarguable, and it's only just clicked that number four and number three of this top five are both Ridley Scott movies.
They are, because number three is All Those Moments Will Be Lost in Time, like Tears in the Rain, Tears in Rain, sorry, from Blade Runner. So
yes.
Roy Batty's farewell speech.
This is kind of, I mean, obviously it's an amazing moment, but it's a part of my theory that Roy Batty is actually the hero of the film.
That's fair.
Deckard is the villain.
Well, it's interesting, isn't it, how a lot of writings about the film since have essentially turned the replicants. I mean, if you read those follow-up books by the author whose name I have forgotten, I apologise, they essentially kind of transformed things so the replicants became more human than human and the humans became less human than human. Mm. It went kind of both ways. And I think that is probably a correct reading. It'll be interesting to see how the sequel turns out in that respect.
Very interesting. But yeah, to me, this is a hero's death.
Yeah.
A moment of self-sacrifice. Is this a self-sacrifice, really? He knows he's shutting down, doesn't he?
No, it's not self-sacrifice. He's failed to save himself. But yeah. There's a redemptive element to it, obviously.
It. Yeah, a great moment. And Rutger Hauer still knows the speech off by heart and will recite it for you if you ask him.
I have, and he did.
It. Yeah. I didn't, and he did.
He's doing it somewhere now.
Yeah. I think he's playing Blackpool and Bournemouth this summer in rep.
But Samuel L. Jackson can do that with the Ezekiel 25:17 speech
he can,
as well.
And Bryan Singer can do it with the Your Life Won't Be Worth the Paper the Contract Put Out That Is Printed On scene from Usual Suspects.
Wow.
But he can actually recite the lines that were cut from that speech as well.
Okay.
And you can still do that if you ask him these days. Yeah.
Show off. Christopher Walken can't do the gold watch scene anymore. I asked him if he couldn't.
At a press conference I did once with Clint Eastwood, I was in the audience, I didn't moderate it. He did the Do You Feel Lucky Punk scene speech to me.
Amazing.
In response to a question I asked him about Dirty Harry.
Amazing.
And that was, okay. Put a fork in me, I'm done. It's pretty awesome. Number two, BMX Bandits. How did BMX Bandits get into this list?
Oh, Chris, you big silly.
Oh, it's E.T. the Extraterrestrial. It's the moment when the bike takes off.
Is an interesting discussion because we didn't know whether to put it over the one where they fly over the sun and it's all of them, or it's just the two of them and it's over the moon, which is the Amblin sign.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So when we went for the fire one, because there's a rush of, they're going to get captured. Oh, no, they're not. They've escaped. Like, enjoyment from it. But I don't know. It feels to me that the moon is the iconic.
That might
moment.
Be number one for me, or the goodbye scene, which again, we've established I'm a wuss, also makes me cry every single time. I think it's just there's nothing more magical than that scene, and I use that in a very science fiction way, not a
sci-fi fancy. Magic.
Yeah, sci-fi magic. Yeah.
It's sci-mag.
Yeah.
Number one. How much was this debated? This is interesting. Dan didn't get his way with the Planet of the Apes. Instead, number one is HAL Shutting Down from 2001, A Space Odyssey.
Terry told us it was number one, so it's number one.
No, actually, okay, so I got, obviously, everyone that works on the mag gave me a list of their favourite sci-fi moments. And this genuinely was the one that came up on the most lists. It came up on several people that work on Empire's lists. It couldn't be ignored. Just because it was not on your list, Chris, doesn't mean it didn't appear on the most list.
I just want to say, for the record, though, I did not choose a moment from this overrated film.
The film itself, mic drop. What you think about it, but this is a hell of a sequence.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
I think the stills we have there in the magazine do make that case, and just the look of it has been hugely influential. And it is still getting referenced. It is still cropping up in films today. It's not my favourite, but I do appreciate it, if that makes sense. I sort of think it's brilliant, but I don't love it in the same way that I would love E.T., for example.
I mean, there's a parallel to the Roy Batty scene we were just talking about as well. I'm not trying to say that Hal's a hero of the movie, but the way you actually start feeling sorry for Hal, and Hal's not even a physically present, other than being a glowing red dot. As he's shutting down and his mind is going, as he says, you feel really bad for him. But also at the same time, this is actually an epic battle. It's a battle scene, this moment, because this is the future of evolution. Is it going to be artificial or is it going to be organic? And again, this was, the resonation there to artificial intelligence, AI artificial intelligence as well, years and years later. And also, 2001 itself, I mean, science fiction, cinematic science fiction as we know it is here. This is the genesis point of the new era of sci-fi.
It feels like the quintessential quiet action scene.
Yeah.
Like the lost art of that almost, because, I mean, Mission Impossible, where he's dangling in Langley, that feels like another one. And where's that, by the way? There's nothing from Mission Impossible in here. And that's all.
that's a spy movie, mate.
Well, it's interesting because we were talking about, I know at one point several Marvel movies were in contention to be on the list. I mean, are they technically sci-fi? There are movies I don't think of as sci-fi, so...
But then you've got Spider-Man making that his little webs shooters, and that's certainly in the... That's no longer organic, right? Like it was in Sam Raimi's. That's now...
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's now him
technically speaking.
Yeah, I think it's science fiction.
Thor is sci-fi.
Yes.
Really, when you look at it that way. But yeah, number one, HAL Shuts Down. I would have personally gone from this movie, which I don't love, the Star Child sequence, because it's so head trippy, and which is, I think, something that's, it's not really in the top 10, certainly. There's, that sort of head trippy, challenging cinematic moments. And it's wonderfully cinematic as well, but this is a great sequence. It's just a film, personally, that I don't love. But it's a fantastic number one. Very, very quickly, because we all have to go. What one moment do you think should have been on the list? It's not on the list.
There's a few films that aren't there that I would like to see there. Minority Report, I'd probably put in that first sort of dancing with the computer screens sequence, actually, where he's figuring out with the prediction. War of the Worlds, it is often maligned, and let's be honest, rightly so for some bits, but the initial attack is incredible. Mm-hmm. That's the Spielberg one, the original. Children of Men, kind of sci-fi.
I'd say sci-fi.
I can't think of anything. Can I have like the bottom half of your list?
Yeah, sure. I'll pass it over. But you won't want Babylon 5 from that list. So
Babylon 5 is a big pile of shit.
Babylon 5 is not a big pile of shit.
And a roundabout response is Get Out. Helen.
I'm sorry. Anyway, but around the end of about season 3, we had an intergalactic war developing. That was as good as sci-fi TV gets.
Anything with Jason Carter from Babylon 5.
Yeah.
And I'm just...
You're there, aren't you?
Just
you're
there. Yeah. It's just amazing. Incredible. I love Babylon 5. It's not a big pile of shit. Johnny, what else is on that list?
Well, on this list, I wish I'm actually going to... I know no one likes them, and likes them less and less. Sorry, I've just thrown the paper at Helen for no reason. I know no one likes them, and they're not well thought of, but I think there are good moments in the prequels.
I agree.
And I wonder if we should have a prequel moment higher than any other Star Wars moment just to annoy everybody.
Would you do like Yoda pulling a lightsaber? What would you do? Would you do
Duel
of the Fates?
I love Duel of the Fates. I really love Across the Universe. That's the loves theme, right? Episode 2. As a piece of music, I love it.
Oh, okay, yeah, all right, yeah.
I don't love him falling off the space potato, but I do love him. I do love the music that they have for that. I wonder if the final Obi-Wan moment where you were supposed to bring balance to the Force, not destroy it.
Okay.
I think he sells that moment. I like that moment.
I go for Order 66. That whole sequence is amazing.
Oh, no, I go for Order 66 too. Thanks.
It's fantastic. Genuinely fantastic. Dan?
So, Guardians of the Galaxy, there was a decision to avoid the superhero genre clogging up the list, because once you kind of open the doors to the superhero genre, then
I mean,
on a
Superman
list of 50...
is sci-fi.
Yeah. So, but, yeah, Guardians of the Galaxy, I think, was maybe a baby that got thrown out with that bathwater, conceptually. I could go for the prison escape sequence. I could go for Drax saying, nothing goes over my head, my reflexes are too fast, I would catch it. Mm-hmm. Or another Drax moment where he puts his hand out and strokes Rocket.
Yeah.
And Rocket shudders and
at
then
the
accepts
end.
It. Yeah, at the end.
Yeah.
So, and that's one of my favourite of the Marvel movies. So I kind of, I do have regrets about that not being on this list at all. I think Interstellar has some great science fiction moments. I think the sight of the black hole, the landing on the water planet, and the tsunami comes in. I could have gone for that as well. And Firefly for a TV series, sci-fi TV series, when Mal kicks the guy into the turbine, the engine turbine, suddenly. Mm-hmm. You think there's going to be a long extended scene of them, you know, and then just kicks him into the turbine, and it's a great kind of throwaway moment, very Whedon-esque.
There's a great shock death in Firefly that I won't spoil here. Mm. We spoiled everything else, but I'm not going to spoil that. But that really took me by surprise. And Firefly is interesting. Serenity is interesting because I hadn't seen Firefly. And in fact, I've tried to watch Firefly since, and I've really struggled with it. It's very slow, and
So many episodes as well to get
through. I know.
That's a tough binge.
9 episodes? Do you want me to set aside up to 9 hours of my time to watch this? No. But I really love Serenity, and I thought that shock death moment really, really.
Oh, you're talking about the Serenity shock death moment?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah.
Sorry, you're talking about Firefly.
I was actually talking about Firefly, episode of Firefly.
Firefly,
I can't remember,
Serenity.
Actually, I can't remember this specific episode off the top of my head, but it's the moment where Mal kicks the guy into the engine, the turbine of the engine.
There's so many. I don't have the list of stuff I sent to you, but there's so many moments. I'm a big sci-fi guy. I mean, I love Battle Beyond the Stars. I think that's a fantastic take on the Magnificent Seven story. And George Peppard's death in that is a very, very elegiac, very sad, kind of funny moment as well. And I've just ruined that for you, but it's a Magnificent Seven, so you know. Pretty much all die. That's really, really good. There's nothing from Event Horizon on here, Dan. What the hell is going on?
Well, that's what I think. I think it's interesting. Like, all the things that you look through, you would, like, these would be films that as a whole would get, you know, decent reviews. People would think quite highly of them. There's nothing, and we talked about the prequels just a moment ago. But also, we're open on the Jurassic Park moment. Mm. And, you know, the T-Rex attack is great. But, I mean, so is the T-Rexes attacking and the glass breaking in
The
Lost World.
Yeah, that's an amazing sequence.
That is an amazing sequence. And in the truest sense of moments, the truest sense of the great moments, that is a great moment in a film that is perhaps not great, but we've perhaps overlooked some of those.
Absolutely. I mean, that's the thing. Yeah. You know, it's a 50-moment list. It's almost impossible to get a list that everyone will be happy with, everyone will agree with. I my love for Event Horizon. It is well documented, but I wouldn't genuinely put a moment from Event Horizon on here. but I would have put the opening of Contact, Robert Zemeckis' Contact.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that, if you don't know how that film begins, it starts with a close up of Earth and an explosion of noise of different radio shows and TV shows just bombarding the audience, and it slowly begins to pull back from Earth. Through the solar system, through the galaxy, past the other planets, and the sound dies away to nothingness, and it goes through various nebula, and it goes on forever, and it is possibly the greatest shot I have ever seen at summing up how small and insignificant we are.
Okay,
it's extraordinary.
There's a better shot in that film.
Is a better shot in that film,
which is the mirror shot.
The mirror shot,
which I think you can find it on YouTube very easily. There's Jenna Malone as the young Ellie Arroway.
Yeah,
and it still boggles my mind how exactly he did it or even conceived it.
Yeah.
Let alone executed it.
Yeah,
but it's nothing to do with sci-fi in itself. As
precisely,
a moment,
I think because I was pitching for Contact, and then I thought, oh, I love the mirror shot.
Yeah,
the mirror shot to this day is the only time I've turned to a friend of mine in the cinema And we both looked at each other and went, what did we just see? I have no idea how he did that. Yeah. What the hell? Because yeah, it's not ostentatious. You don't expect it in that moment. With The Matrix, Star Wars, you expect flashy special effects. In the middle of Contact, which is largely Earthbound, you don't. It's a film I love. I think it's fantastic, and I would have chosen that moment. But I'm glad. Just last thing here, I'm glad that my favorite TV sci-fi moment of all time made the list, which is the end of the Best Both Worlds two-parter, the greatest cliffhanger I would say in TV history, when Jean-Luc Picard is turned into Locutus of Borg, and then Will Riker decides to fire on the Borg ship. You go, no, you can't do that because you'll blow up Picard.
It's like the two-step moment, isn't it? First of all, you've got the, oh my God, he's been assimilated. And then you've got them going, well, okay, fine, we're going to kill him. it's awesome.
And then the kind of the way they get out of it, it's season 3 to season 4, isn't it? So the season 4 part 1, the way they get out of it is a little bit... Really? It's a bit disappointing.
I can't even remember how they get out of it. I remember that moment so well.
Well, the idea is that the Borg have adapted to the frequency of the Empire, Enterprise's weapons, so the weapons are in actual fact meaningless and ineffectual. So, you know, the decision to fire on Picard, although he still takes it, you know, doesn't really ultimately go anywhere. Bit of a shame. But hey, what a moment. It's a cracking list, and we didn't go through everything because we ran out of time. If you want to take a look at the list, it is, of course, in the new issue of Empire, on sale now. As I said, all good and evil newsagents priced £4.50. Jeff Goldblum, Independence Day Research, is on the cover. We could have talked about this list, things that were on it, things that weren't on it, for hours. But
and we did, we just didn't record it. Yeah, we did. As we were making it.
Yes, precisely. Maybe one day we will record those conversations and make them available.
No, maybe we should.
Just cut all the swearing out, it'll be fine. But I hope you've enjoyed this very, very special Sci-Fi Moments edition of the Empire Podcast. And if you don't agree with our choices, or you do agree with our choices, or you think there's something from a film that maybe we didn't put in there, do let us know via Twitter. We're at Empire Magazine. Use the hashtag Empire Podcast. We're on Facebook as well, and you can email us podcast@empireonline.com. The regular podcast, the Mothership Podcast, if you will, is up every Friday. There's also a Warcraft The Beginning spoiler special podcast with Duncan Jones. That's going to be up round about now as well. And there's lots more to come over a very, very packed summer. So we hope that you stay with us. And until next time, it is goodbye from Johnny.
Goodbye.
It's goodbye from Dan.
Nanu Nanu. I don't know the goodbye version of
Where
Nanu
Nanu.
Where
was Mork in this list? Where was Mork in this list?
Up my ass.
And then does Mork, by extension, make Happy Days sci-fi?
I think the Fonz makes Happy Days sci-fi.
We'll do the 50 greatest sci-fi characters, and the Fonz is number one. It's got to be done. But we'll do the pointless special first.
Right, okay.
Pointless and then Fonz.
As soon as we get that pointless special past Terry, we'll then do the next one.
It's a totally pointless exercise. And it's goodbye from Helen.
Toodaloo.
And it's goodbye from me. Until next time, live long and prosper. Bye.